From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
He was the first African-American law professor at a major university in the South, and has taught more African-American lawyers than anyone in the history of legal education. For 50 years, he has given distinguished service at the Howard University School of Law and has helped shape generations of legal minds. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is Professor Spencer Boyer. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Thanks for joining us. So tell me a little bit about your upbringing. Where were you born and how many siblings?
I was born in, Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is just outside of Philadelphia. I'm from a family of 12. My father was a maintenance man. My mother was a domestic. Westchester, Pennsylvania was interesting because, again, it was partially segregated and partially integrated. My elementary education was in a segregated school, but then after the first six years, for some reason, then they allowed us to integrate. So it was a very, very good education, notwithstanding that.
Okay. And what led you to law and as well to college in general?
Well, as I indicated, I was the family of 12. It was serendipitous. One of my friends was attending Howard University. He mentioned that Howard University gave an examination to get a scholarship. So I took the examination, and fortunately I was able to get a four-year scholarship to Howard. Otherwise, I would not have been able to go to college.
And your undergrad major was engineering.
Electrical engineering. I went to electrical engineering because I knew that I would like to go further, but again, from a poor family, I knew that I could not afford an education past Howard. So I decided to take something that would allow me to immediately make some money. And I was going to save up money to go on further education.
Okay, so you clearly did that. What then led you to law school, and where did you decide to matriculate for law school?
All right, I was not just a paper engineer, I was an actual engineer. And I worked with IBM for 3 years designing computers. I decided I could not live in upstate New York where I was living, so I decided to go to law school. And again, being an engineer, I decided I was going to go to patent law. I went to GW because Howard did not have any engineering law. And after being at GW, I was again very fortunate. Some of my professors indicated that I should do graduate work, and so I went to Harvard and got my master's degree at Harvard. While I was at Harvard, incidentally, one of my favorite things was I was the co-founder of the Harvard Civil Rights Civil Liberties Law Journal, which is now one of the top law journals in the country. When I was at Harvard, I noticed that there were several people who were lawyers who had come back to get their master's. And so I decided, wait a minute, if that's the case, why don't I stay and get my master's and probably go into teaching? This was in 1966, really at the height of affirmative action. So I decided I was going to go into law teaching. I was very fortunate because I got several opportunities to teach at different schools. Howard also recruited me and also offered me the lowest salary. But I decided something the lawyers call the but-for test. And I said, but for Howard, I would not be able to do any of this. So I said, I'm going to go back to Howard. I'm going to pay my debt and teach there for 4 years because they gave me 4 years. I'm going to give them 4 years of back. I'm now at the end of my 50th year, and I still have not repaid my debt to Mother Howard.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredible. Now, when you describe that debt, put that debt in context for me when you talk about that debt.
Well, I was very, very fortunate again because when I was an undergraduate, Dr. Mordecai Johnson was the president, and he imbued me and the rest of my classes with the idea of being a race man. And people don't know what that means today, but I knew what a race man meant. And so consequently, throughout my life and all of my dealings, fortunately, I've been able to carry the spirit of being a race man to Howard. And the thing that was most important to me, at least as a lawyer, as I indicated, I went to George Washington, which is a good law school, and I went to Harvard, which is a good law school. I knew the bare elements of law. It was teaching at Howard University that I knew what the soul and essence of Howard was. While I was teaching, I learned the law.
Now, with that in mind, at the time that you joined the faculty to now, some 50 years, you clearly have seen a significant revolution in legal education in this country. What is your viewpoint about the state of legal education today when you look at what it was like when you joined the faculty some 50 years ago?
Well, one of the things that I find is that originally when I started teaching, I find a major difference in the attitude of students. 50 years ago, students were interested in, again, going up and out, that they were interested in what was going to be the thickness of the carpet in their law offices. Now they're concerned about the thickness of the carpets in the businesses that they own. So they've now become more entrepreneur, and that is the major thing. And rather than indicating that we're going to integrate lunch counters, which is an old story, our students now are concerned about having their clients own the lunch counter.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Professor Spencer Boyer. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. To take a pivot from just the students in terms of their entrepreneurial spirit, when you look at civil rights in particular, which clearly was an area of focus at the time that you came on to today, what is your perspective about the advances that legally have been afforded versus the reality of what is in our society today?
Well, the mantra was to make it a colorblind society. It is not a colorblind society, and I do not foresee it being a colorblind society for many years to come. So consequently, it's necessary for attorneys to always keep their eye on the prize. And Howard University School of Law, that is the essence of Howard, that we, in fact, I think, again, imbue our students with the whole concept of being race men, whether they know it or not, that's what we, in fact, send many of them out with the concept of doing.
Now, you've received many teaching accolades for your pedagogy, for your presence in the classroom. What do you think are some of the key elements, if you were advising a new young law professor coming into the faculty, what do you think are the key elements for that type of success?
You have to listen to your students, that you cannot say, okay, fine, I'm the professor and I'm going to teach. One of the courses I teach this semester, which is one of my favorite courses, is a course called From Blackface to Hip Hop, Culture and the Law. And I found out so much about the law from my students. I'm just amazed. It just staggers my imagination what they come into that class with. It's a seminar, and I feel like almost I should be getting paid. I'm sorry, I should be paying to get the information. Now, don't take that as a hint to say I want less. But it just is, the students amaze me, and I just cannot believe the breadth and wealth of talent they come to the law school with. And I think that may be one of the differences that I've noticed over the change.
Now, the Spencer H. Boyer Scholarship was established by former students to give to outstanding law students at the annual Black Entertainment and Sports Lawyer Association Conference. Sports and entertainment, when we talk about, again, civil rights, not the traditional armamentarium to fight those wars, but again, corporate lawyers and entertainment lawyers have a lot to offer our society in terms of shaping the culture and affording lots of people an opportunity. What is your perspective about sports and entertainment law today in 2016?
Well, one of the things that we're very fortunate about is that we have taught entertainment law and sports law at Howard since 1972. We were one of the first schools, black or white, to teach entertainment law. And again, the reason is that we talk about cultural appropriation and something we talked about, swagger jacking. And that what happens is that it's necessary for our attorneys or our students to be able to represent. Now, I always used the statement when I teach entertainment law that there are two words to show business, show and business. We're often in the show, but very seldom in the business. Mm-hmm. So consequently, that's one of the things that we talk about. And when you talk about entertainment law or sports law, is representing the African-American, because there is an understanding between the African-American artist and the African-American entertainer and lawyer that I think cannot be matched.
Now, you've also participated in a lot of public service, being a member of the NAACP, and the board of WETA Television. I could go on and on. How important do you think it is for our students today to combine truth and service in the true Howard spirit?
It's essential that again, you must give service to the community, and in fact, also give service back to the university. I think that many of our alumni sort of forget that part. They give the service to the community, but we need to make sure they also give back to the university.
Absolutely. How many deans have you worked for?
I've served under 17 different deans and 7 presidents.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. Now, as you look at the deans, let's start with the deans. As you look at the deans in particular, what characteristics from the deans really left an impression on you? Specific deans that may have been your favorites in terms of the engagement you had with them.
Well, one of the things that I find out with the different deans, that they all have different personalities. There is no such thing as the perfect dean. And however, I must admit that the deans that I started off with teaching, like Clarence Clyde Ferguson, for whom we have a speaking engagement, and Jimmy Washington, the deans that I started, who in fact gave me were my mentors, those are the deans that I remember more than any other dean.
Now, I wouldn't ask you the same about your presidents. We leave that alone.
As you know, I taught one of our presidents, Patrick Swigert, was one of my students also.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. But as we begin to close, I want you to reflect on the 50 years, your goal of repaying that debt, which you've already stated is still unpaid. Today in 2016, for the student who is coming to Howard University School of Law, why and what does that debt look like for that person?
Well, one of the things that amazes me, and I can almost tell the difference between students who've gone to predominantly white schools and students who've gone to HBCUs. I can tell it from the way that they relate to the law. But even though there's a difference between them when they start, I would hope that again, by the time they graduate in 3 years, that we have imbued them with the spirit of Howard University School of Law, which again is, again, truth and service.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Professor Spencer Boyer. And although he doesn't believe that he has repaid the debt that Howard University owes him, I think he has made a significant down payment. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.
This is Harold Fisher. The Daily Drum is more than news, sports, and weather. It's information, conversation, edification. I talk to the newsmakers and other great guests that make you think. You're not just listening. You are part of the process with your phone calls. You can find me on Facebook/Harold T. Fisher or follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR. Join me, Harold Fisher, from 7 to 7:30 p.m. for the Daily Drum on 96.3 WHUR, the adult mix.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR World on HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, glasshouseradio.com, HUR Voices Sirius XM 141, HBCU Sirius XM 142, and 96.3 WHUR Washington.